mechanisms of story-making into our DNA. As David Buss puts it, story-making is an evolved psychological mechanism, a set of procedures within the organism designed to take a particular slice of information and transform it via decision rules into output that historically has helped with the solution to an adaptive problem. A psychological mechanism exists in current organisms because it led, on average, to the successful solution for that organism's ancestors of a specific adaptive problem. In the case of human beings, the problem was chaos and the dread of death. The storifying mechanisms of the mind work in this way. Throughout the day, the body absorbs millions of bits of raw sensory stimuli. Somewhere below the level of consciousness, the mind sorts through this mass and imposes decision rules that sort the relevant from the irrelevant. It ignores 99% of all data and concentrates on the 1% that grabs attention. And what grabs attention? Change. As long as conditions remain secure and constant, we pursue the business of life. But come change, and we're suddenly under threat or surprised by good luck. In either case, we react. Subconscious survival systems kick into gear. Chief among them, story-making. Instantly, the core self triggers the mind to storify this event. The brain flexes its storifying muscles in Brodmann Area 10. Here, the past flows into the future as the mind recalls previous events and projects possible outcomes. The mind compares prior happenings of a similar kind with its current experience, so it knows what to do now and what to do in the future should this ever happen again. The mind, of course, does not convert every trivial change to story. Instead, evolution has taught us to focus on meaningful, dynamic change. Storified thought interprets every event in terms of its core value. In story creation, however, the word value does not refer to monoconcepts such as success, truth, loyalty, love, or freedom. Those words name only half a value. Dynamic events affect our lives not as singularities, but as binaries of positive-negative value charge. They pivot our lives around experiences of success-failure, truth-lie, loyalty-betrayal, love-hate, right-wrong, rich-poor, life-death, winning-losing, courage-cowardice, power-weakness, freedom, slavery, excitement, boredom, and many more. Values pump the lifeblood of story. For an event to be meaningful, the mind must sense that the charge of at least one value has undergone change. The reason is obvious. If the charge of a value at stake in a situation does not change, what happens is a trivial activity of no significance. But when a value's charge changes from positive to negative, or negative to positive, for instance, from love to hate or hate to love, from winning to losing or losing to winning, the event becomes meaningful and emotions flow. Because a well-told story wraps its telling around emotionally charged values, its meaning becomes marked in our memory. This is why a fictional event can be more memorable than an actual happening. Well-told stories implant patterns of possible behaviors as if they were the memories of actual experiences. These become matrices for future actions. The confused values in real life often make events forgettable, while the clarity and power of a fictional emotional charge cement it in memory as a powerful future reference point. To make sense out of life, the story-making mind strings meaning-charged events through time, connecting and unifying them by cause and effect. At story's end, meaning is not only understood rationally, but also felt emotionally. The form of story, at its simplest, goes like this. As the telling opens, the central character's life, as expressed in its core value, happiness, sadness, for example, is in relative balance. But then, something happens that upsets this balance and decisively changes the core value's charge one way or the other. He could, for example, fall in love, positive, or out of love, negative. The character then acts to restore life's balance, and from that moment on, a sequence of events, linked by cause and effect, moves through time, progressively and dynamically swinging the core value back and forth from positive to negative, negative to positive. At climax, the story's final event changes the core value's charge absolutely, and the character's life returns to balance. The evolving mind's mastery of storied perception gave it the means to streamline the overwhelming deluge of actuality into a manageable, efficient, human-sized reality. Its story-structured processes imposed order, unity, and meaning on a chaotic, discordant, meaningless existence. Thanks to storied thought, humanity learned how to survive with purpose and balance. As Kenneth Burke put it, story equips us to live. The eight powers that propel story. In order to storyfy thought, the mind evolved and perfected eight powerful faculties. When used in concert, they interconnect our impressions of people, places, and things scattered through our past, present, and future into the coherent assemblage we call reality. 1. Self-awareness, the power to distinguish the mind's subjective core self from its objective public self and observe the outer self as if it were a separate personality. Self-awareness, as we noted earlier, came with the first human thought. Although time changes the objective self, the core self feels that it lives unchanged and outside of time. Nonetheless, me also realizes that it cannot exist without its objective self and therefore dreads its loss. Over time, storied thinking reshaped perception. The mind found meaning in existence and belief in life after death. With purpose in one hand and immortality in the other, humanity finally took its place in time. 2. Other awareness, the power to look behind the eyes of another person and sense within him a consciousness very much like your own. With other perception, your mind infers that whatever happens inside itself also happens inside the minds of others. Strong other awareness becomes empathy, a combination of identification and insight such that when something happens to another person, it feels as if it happens to you. For the storyteller, other awareness guides the creation of characters that make the choices and take the actions that carry out the story. 3. Memory, the power to store and recall experience. The past makes the future in this way. Memory builds an understanding of people and the world by recording patterns of experience, stacking them one on top of another by what they have in common, and then telling itself, this is how the world works. The mind then uses these patterns from the past in an effort to control the future by taking actions designed to make history repeat itself. But often, at critical moments, our memory-based sense of probability explodes when a tried-and-true action triggers a wholly unexpected effect, leaving us feeling that when it really matters, memory betrays us. As we will hear in upcoming chapters, these violations of probability become the turning points that propel all stories. 4. Intelligence, the power to extract knowledge from both formal learning and everyday experience, and then apply deductive, inductive, and causal logics to reason to factual, truthful conclusions. The finest intelligence also spots fallacies and refutes them. In storytelling, knowledge generates content, the setting and its cast of characters. 5. Imagination, the power to reshape reality into undreamed-of possibilities. When knowledge becomes time-worn, the mind loses energy. But even the most calcified knowledge, stirred with imagination, can renew itself, becoming flexible and life-giving. In like fashion, the same old story told over and over risks emptiness and boredom. So storymakers call upon imagination to give their tellings limitless variations. 6. Insight, the power to see through appearances and perceive inner causalities. An insightful mind reads surface signs and then senses the hidden forces that move within and cause things to happen. Data, for example, only measures the outer results of what has changed. Insight discovers how and why what has changed has changed. The storyteller, as we will hear, uses this keen perspective to show us a world we think we understand, but then cracks open reality to first surprise us, then deliver a rush of insight into the hows and whys of that world and its characters. A lifetime of story-driven insights civilizes human beings, builds institutions, and makes culture viable. 7. Correlation, the power to create. The correlating mind takes two things it already knows and then seeks a hidden connection, a third thing that joins the two in a way no one else has ever seen before. This analogical logic is the essence of creativity. The discovery of the third thing fuses two known things into something utterly new. Not just an innovation or refinement, but something unexpected and unprecedented. Throughout history, master storytellers have constantly correlated new content with new forms in previously unimagined ways. But no matter how creative and revolutionary their tellings, the best stories always make a human sense, always shine a new light into human needs and human desires. 8. Self-expression, the power to perform. The self-aware mind harmonizes these distinct powers to thread its way through multidimensional, multi-leveled ongoing realities, piercing causes to their effects, weaving people and events into story form. Telling begins in one mind, but ends in another. None of the mind's gifts would matter if the stories it creates could not be performed for other minds to experience. From the earliest, talented storytellers performed three kinds of stories around the fire. Action epics of hunting, combat, and survival against the elements, tales of supernatural powers that control nature, and myths of immortality in an afterlife realm. The first became the foundation legends of civilizations, the second made sense out of time and space, and the third founded the world's religions. Together, these stories taught the tribe how to live in this world and prepare for the next. The Story-Powered Mind. The mind builds stories to bridge the gap between itself and the universe, between itself and the past, present, and future. Story form imposes order on chaos. It penetrates the enigma of the seams to express the cause and effect of the is. It unifies events to bring meaning out of meaninglessness. Knowledge expressed in story form gathers other human beings around its themes, uniting communities and building cultures. So, in the marketing context, the takeaway is this. Storified communication is the most powerful form of messaging because story fits the mind. Story fits the mind because the mind converts actuality into story in the first place. It's a tautology. As Hamlet says, there is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. This is why story alone represents a way out of today's marketing crisis, once you master story's structure and how telling works. Chapter 4. The Definition of Story. To master storified marketing, CMOs need solid working answers to fundamental questions. What exactly is a story? What are its primal components? How do these elements interact within a story? How do I create a powerful marketing story? How will this story create and convey the meaning I want to express? How does this story play out within my consumer's mind, influence her feelings, guide her choices? And most important, how will this story motivate my customer to a positive, profitable action? Story, like art and music, is a word you think you understand until you try to define it. You might wonder why. After all, you've heard a lifetime of stories. You can cite hundreds of examples. You tell stories every day to your friends, co-workers, and self. You assume you know what story is, and yet your definition seems ambiguous at best. Reference books offer little help. Consider this from the Oxford English Dictionary. An account of imaginary or real people and events told for entertainment. For the working marketer, a soft definition like that is beyond use. No one can work with a tool if he doesn't know what it is, what it does, and how to fix it when it breaks. To make matters worse, Roget's thesaurus runs thick with confusing metonyms like account and misnomers like journey. When a marketer mistakes one of these softer versions for the real thing, he mistakenly assumes his campaign tells a strong story when in fact it does not. As a result, the campaign fails and he blames its story, not realizing that he didn't tell one in the first place. Let's clarify what story is by first looking at what it is not and eliminating any weak synonyms or false equivalents. Story is not a process. Auto parts moving down an assembly line to become a car, bolt by screw by rivet, is not a story. Manufacturing is a horizontal process. Like a story, the operation has a beginning, middle, and end that moves from an open state to a closed state, in this case from disassembled to assembled. But unlike a story, a process has neither a desire, nor a conflict, nor a core character. As a result, no one's life is touched or changed. A process accumulates. A story progresses. Story is not a hierarchy. When asked to tell their company's story, many executives simply reach for its organizational chart. For them, the corporate story describes how things get done, how decisions and tasks flow up and down the pyramid of power. But corporate organization is simply another kind of process, in this case, a vertical one. Hierarchies supplant chaos with order, but tell no story. Story is not a chronology. Other executives, when asked the same question, recite their company's history. But a corporation's chronology, especially the kind found in investor prospectuses, is, once again, just another process. In this case, it's a temporal one, told as a list of growth marks accumulated over a sequence of dates. Story is not a journey. The buzzword journey is a fashionable false metaphor for life story. Life, of course, is nothing like a journey. If our days have any pattern, they zigzag elliptically as we reach left and right, striving for achievement, love, and security. Euphemisms, such as journey, separate the mind from the unpleasant realities around it, and, like the genteelisms we use when we toilet-train children, they have a place in polite society. But the protagonist of a well-told story is not a passive passenger. She struggles dynamically through time and space to fulfill her desire. Story is not a narrative. Many marketing campaigns have flopped because an ad agency didn't know the difference between narrative and story. Narrative may sound academic, even scientific, but in a business context, the term is neither logical nor precise. Its use commits a categorical error for this reason. All stories are narratives, but not all narratives are stories. The four misnomers listed earlier are narratives, not stories. Narratives tend to be flat, bland, repetitive, and boring recitations of events. They slide through the mind like juice through a goose, and as a result, they have little or no influence on customers. Stories, on the other hand, are value-charged and progressive. The mind embraces a well-told story. The imagination is its natural home. Once through our mental door, story fits, sticks, and excites consumer choice. The next time you're bored to the bone by somebody's story, in all likelihood, you're not being told a story. If you were, you'd be listening and engrossed. Instead, the guy is torturing you with a narrative, probably a repetitious recitation of, and then I did this, and then I did that, and then I did the other thing, and then. What story is? What is a story precisely? The essential core event in all stories ever told in the history of humanity can be expressed in just three words. Conflict changes life. Therefore, the prime definition becomes a dynamic escalation of conflict-driven events that cause meaningful change in a character's life. The graphic can be viewed in the PDF. The eight stages of story design. When story aspires to art, it becomes an infinitely complex and endlessly variable thing. Fiction styles range from farce to tragedy. Its compounds span from the one-man show to the interweaving of dozens of plots and subplots. Its lengths fluctuate from the seconds it takes to tell a joke to the 100-hour multi-season television series. At the heart of all these variants, however, beats a minimal but essential form. When we use the phrase story form, we mean its universal, irreducible foundation. If we were to dissect every coherent story ever told, eight essential components, assembled over eight stages, would span the creative process from beginning to end. The performance of these elements varies as much as people vary. No two personalities are quite the same, nor are any two stories they tell. Inside each telling, however, an essential skeleton holds organs and limbs in place while it moves through time. As with the arts of music and dance, the primary dimension of story is time. In the same way that classical music divides performances into movements through time, the life of a well-told story can be broken into 8 stages of creative preparation and dynamic change. The success of each stage depends on the execution of its defining principle. To illustrate each stage and the prime principle that guides it, we will use Moneyball, a film written by Steven Zaillian and Aaron Sorkin. The Motion Picture Academy nominated the film for 6 Oscars, including Best Actor, Best Picture, and Best Adapted Screenplay. Stage 1. The Target Audience. Prime Principle, Meaningful Emotional Effect. Before an author composes his story, he needs a clear vision of his audience and the final effect his work will have on both their thoughts and feelings. Moneyball. The screenwriters aimed at an adult audience of sports lovers in general, baseball fans in particular, and all those who adore Brad Pitt. Since most of the true fans in the audience already knew the outcome of the events portrayed in the film, the specific rational effect the storytellers aimed for was a deep understanding of the hows and whys behind the events. Their specific target of meaningful emotional satisfaction was the calm sense of gratification that comes when a quiet hero beats the odds from behind the scenes. Stage 2. Subject Matter. Prime Principle, Balance. A story takes place at a specific time in a specific physical and social world. As the telling begins, the protagonist's life is anchored in a core value that rests in a state of balance. His days contain as many minor ups as downs, but the positives and negatives of this value even out to a more or less neutral state. Moneyball. The subject matter of the Zaillian and Sorkin screenplay was the true story of Billy Beane, general manager of the Oakland Athletics, and Beane's struggle to build a winning team. In 2001, Billy Beane, Brad Pitt, put together a reasonably successful team. His A's made the playoffs, although not the World Series. The core value in Beane's career, success, failure, rests in balance. Stage 3. The Inciting Incident. Prime Principle, Imbalance. The inciting incident is an unforeseen event that starts the story by upsetting the balance of the core character's life. The neutral charge of its core value suddenly turns sharply positive or negative. Either way, this radical change puts the character under pressure. Moneyball. As the 2002 season begins, Billy Beane meets Peter Brand, Jonah Hill, a Yale economics grad who introduces him to the sabermetric method for evaluating players. Beane suddenly sees the beauty in this method and hires Brand as his assistant. This inciting incident turns the balance of Beane's life sharply to the positive. He has hope for the coming year. His core value of success-failure tilts toward the upbeat. Moneyball's inciting incident, however, also brings an unfortunate side effect. The moment Beane embraces the non-traditional data analysis of sabermetrics, he finds himself at war with key personnel: team manager Art Howe, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and chief scout Grady Fuson, Ken Medlock, who hate sabermetrics. Seen from this angle, the full impact of the inciting incident pivots Beane's sense of success-failure sharply from positive to negative. He has major career-wrecking conflicts ahead. Stage 4. The Object of Desire. Prime Principle, an Unfulfilled Need. When the core character senses that the inciting incident has thrown his life out of balance and into jeopardy, he naturally wants to set life back on an even keel. To do so, he conceives of an object of desire. This essential component of all stories is defined as that which the core character feels he must obtain to rebalance his life. Moneyball. Billy Beane's object of desire is his team in the World Series. Stage 5. The first action. Prime principle, tactical choice. To rebalance his life, the core character takes an action, a tactic designed to cause a positive enabling reaction from his world that will either deliver his object of desire or, at the very least, move him toward it. Moneyball. Beane, relying on Peter Brand's sabermetric scouting, hires cast-off, overlooked players to replace the stars that left last year's team. Stage 6. The first reaction. Prime principle, the violation of expectation. Reality subtly violates the core character's expectation. Instead of getting a helpful reaction from his world, the protagonist finds that antagonistic forces, very different and more powerful than he anticipated, rise up to block the protagonist's efforts. A gap cracks open between what he subjectively thought would happen and what objectively does happen. This unforeseen reaction knocks him back even farther from his goal. Moneyball. The Oakland A's lose 26 of their first 46 games. Art Howe attacks sabermetrics as a failure, and against Beane's wishes, he fields the lineup he wants. Stage 7. The crisis choice. Prime principle, insight. Now in even greater jeopardy, the protagonist stands to lose rather than gain his object of desire. So he learns from the first reaction. And with this insight, he renews his efforts and chooses a second action that's more difficult, more risky than the first, yet one he hopes will cause a positive reaction that will finally get him what he wants. Moneyball. Beane trades away Howe's star first baseman to force the team manager to use Brand's sabermetric choice. Stage 8. Climactic reaction. Prime principle, closure. In a compact story, the protagonist's second action causes a climactic reaction that matches his expectations and grants him his object of desire. This climax restores the core character's life to balance and ends the story. Moneyball. Beane's sabermetrically inspired team sets an American League record of 20 wins in a row, finishing the season with a win-loss record of 103-59, a berth in the playoffs, and another chance for Beane to reach the World Series. 8 stages of story design. Stage 1, target audience and a meaningful emotional effect. Stage 2, subject matter and balance. Stage 3, inciting incident and imbalance. Stage 4, object of desire and need. Stage 5, first action and tactical choice. Stage 6, first reaction and violation of expectation. Stage 7, crisis choice and insight. Stage 8, climactic reaction and closure. Long-form stories. Prime principle, progressive action-reaction. In an extended work, stages 7 and 8 repeat with a difference and escalate the telling, progressing to its eventual climax. Again and again, the world's reactions overturn the protagonist's expectations. The new actions he takes and the surprising effects they cause swing his struggles dynamically back and forth between positive and negative charges that build with progressive power. Reversal by reversal, violation by violation, pressure mounts to the breaking point until he makes a crisis decision to take a final climactic action that irreversibly achieves or fails to achieve his object of desire. Escalating story. What follows is a real-life example of escalation with numerous turning points unfolding over many years. See if you can guess the protagonist from the pattern of events. Events that were well-publicized at the time. Target audience, the general public. Subject matter, the retail food business. An entrepreneur founds a profitable business with a high-quality product line and becomes its CEO. Inciting incident. After the founder takes early retirement, the new CEO spins the business into a downward spiral. First action. The founder comes back as CEO, expecting to put the company back into profit. First reaction. The world's economy plunges. His customers can no longer afford his product. Sales fall. Profits fall. Second action. To cut costs, he closes 10% of his outlets, firing their employees and many more besides. Second reaction. Profits fall further, the stock price with them, and Wall Street says the company is headed for failure. Third action. The founder reduces his prices. Third reaction. His sales drop even more. Fourth action. He cuts operating costs. Fourth reaction. His margins shrink. Fifth action. In a flash of inspiration, he rebrands his company by taking on social causes that benefit his employees. Fifth reaction. Inspired by these activist missions, customers come back and spread positive word of mouth. Sixth action. Stockholders, seeking even greater profits, urge the CEO to cut employee benefits. Sixth reaction. The CEO defends employee benefits. Seventh action. He gives his employees even greater benefits and then uses social media to market a new branding campaign that displays his pro-employee values. Seventh reaction. A wave of PR success. Eighth action. He invents a new product. Eighth reaction. The product fails. Ninth action. Learning from his failure, he asks his customers what they want. Ninth reaction. They tell him. Tenth action. He gives them what they want. Tenth reaction. Climax and closure. They give him his greatest success. This, you might recognize, is the story of Howard Schultz and Starbucks. Most marketing uses brief, compact stories. In the practical world of business, the brevity of advertising time, along with the high costs of creatives and production, confines marketing stories to one or two turning points. Meaning. The eight stages of story create meaning in this way. First, at the core of all stories pulses at least one binary value, such as life-death, freedom-tyranny, success-failure, truth-lie, love-hate, and the like. This value changes its charge from negative to positive, or the reverse, over the course of the telling. Examples? The movement from life to death in a tale of adventure, such as Indiana Jones, the pivot from freedom to tyranny in a political drama, such as Orwell's 1984, the growth from failure to success in a career story, such as Moneyball. Second, the dynamic of cause and effect within the story's events expresses the hows and whys, the because of change. Examples: Indiana Jones lives to fight another day because, under pressure, he is courageous, cool, and smart. Winston Smith submits to tyranny because he is vulnerable to the cruelty of Big Brother. The A's win the pennant, and Billy Beane saves his career because he never loses faith in his judgment. This clear, simple statement of value plus cause expresses a story's meaning in one sentence. Chapter 6 will demonstrate how a meaning-filled, emotion-wrapped climax moves the consumer audience to a profitable action. But to prepare for that final creative step, the next chapter will first unpack each of story's 8 stages and explore their contents in full. Chapter 5, The Full Story. The previous chapter took a wide-angle view of story's 8 stages, so you can dissect stories into their major components. To learn fast, locate the 8 stages in stories you love, and watch as the deep pattern of universal story form emerges. This chapter prepares you to craft stories of your own by taking close-ups of these stages and their various aspects. Like a composer of music, a storyteller must learn to play multifaceted instruments that ultimately harmonize and crescendo. Stage 1, the target audience. Prime principle, a meaningful emotional effect. Writers of fiction for page, stage, and screen have little difficulty imagining their stories buying public. Over a career, fine storytellers develop a keen sense of their ideal target reader audience, along with a feel for their work's target emotional effect. Comedy writers labor for laughs, romance writers strive for tears, action writers aim for excitement, authors of psychologically complex tellings hope for correspondingly complex emotional effects. At the end of the day, the professional writer judges his quality of work not by its effect on him, but by the degree to which the effect he hoped for affects his readers or audience. For the creators of marketing stories, however, defining the target audience is far more demanding. The next chapter will examine the multidimensional research in stage 1 of the purpose-told story. Stage 2, subject matter. Prime principle, balance. Powerful stories will not grow in arid ground. A setting must be prepared. So once the reader audience is in sight, storytellers build their tales from the bottom up, starting at the foundations of their story's world, preparing the telling step by step. Subject matter for a story contains 3 major components: a physical and social setting, a protagonist, and a core value. Life offers the storyteller an infinite variety of each. In fact, more often than not, the spark of originality that ignites an exceptional story flashes through a creative's imagination not while she daydreams, but as she sweats out the grunt work of founding her story world and planting its setups. World building, therefore, is storytelling's critical second step. Strong choices made here greatly increase the possibility for success. Weak choices mudslide downhill, burying the stages that follow. The weakest choices of all favor the general over the specific. Writers hoping for a bestseller want their stories to influence the largest number of readers or audience members possible. So they generalize, opting for a one-size-fits-all rather than one-of-a-kind world. This unfortunate step actually shrinks rather than expands their future audience or readership. The mind works best when it moves from the specific to the universal, not the other way around. Consider, for example, the phrase, a piece of furniture. As you listen to it, A vague image blurs your imagination and halts your thoughts because your mind has no inclination to go backward to the particular. But if I say, a wing-back duchess chair upholstered in blood-red leather, a clear image glows in your mind. Instinctively, your imagination moves forward from this particular to the general, slotting the chair into the mental category, furniture. This applies to all aspects of a story's world, physical and social. Therefore, the principle, the more specific the setting, the more universal the story's appeal. With an eye to his end purpose, the storyteller must identify every element of the setup, then research each in depth to generate original choices, and finally, integrate these aspects with precision. As a result, he creates a unique story world for a telling of top-notch quality. Time. A story setting encloses two dimensions of time, location and duration. 1. Location in time. The vast majority of stories happen in the here and now of their contemporary society. Others take place in a historical setting or hypothetical future, and a few in the timeless world of fantasy. 2. Duration through time. Story duration refers to how much time the telling spans in the lives of its characters versus how much time it takes to tell. Telling time ranges from brief seconds on YouTube to the 100 hours, more or less, of a multi-season long-form television series. With a few exceptions, the lifespan within the telling covers far more time than the telling. Space. Two dimensions structure a story's space. One, physical, the horizontal landscape and every object on it. Two, social, the vertical hierarchy of a society's pyramid of power and the possibility for movement up or down. One, physical location. Many stories, especially on stage or in sitcoms, play out in a single enclosed space. A living room, for example, as family members, maps spread on the floor, argue over where to go on vacation. On the other hand, most stories told for the screen or page jump from place to place. A driveway as a family packs for a trip, their picnic on a beach, their dinner in the waterfront restaurant, and so on. 2. Social location. Every physical setting contains a social setting as well, a cast of characters defined by demographic factors such as age, gender, income, employment, and ethnicity. What's more, this cast lives in a culture defined first and foremost by its values, its ideality versus reality, what its citizens believe they should do versus what in fact they do. The core value. The physical and social dimensions brace a story in time and place, but a setting does not become three-dimensional until the teller adds substance in the form of values. As mentioned in Chapter 3, in everyday conversation, when someone says an individual or institution has values, he means positive qualities such as truthfulness, love, generosity, hard work, loyalty, and the like. But for the storymaker, the values he invests in his telling come not as singularities, but binaries of positive-negative charge. Truth-lie, love-hate, generosity-selfishness, hard work-laziness, loyalty-betrayal, life-death, courage-cowardice, hope-despair, meaningfulness-meaninglessness, maturity-immaturity, justice, injustice, and on the list goes, naming all those qualities of human experience that can shift charge dynamically from positive to negative and back again. A telling may incorporate any number, variety, or combination of values, but it anchors its content in one irreplaceable binary, the story's core value. This value determines a story's fundamental meaning and emotion. Suppose a story's core value is love-hate. How and why a person moves from love to hate, or from hate to love, gives the events meaning. As the story moves back and forth between negative and positive charges, emotions flow, not only in the characters, but in the audience as well. But if a storyteller were to extract love-hate from her characters' lives and substitute morality-immorality, this switch in core value would evolve her work from a love story to a redemption plot with all new meanings and all new emotions. If a crime story were to shift its core value from justice-injustice to life-death, it would stop being a crime story and pivot to an action tale. Once again, new emotions, new meanings. If a family story were to de-emphasize the value of unity breakup and instead emphasize maturity-immaturity in one of its children, the plot would radically change genre from domestic drama to a coming-of-age story. The core value that pulses at the heart of a story determines its specific meaning and unique emotional impact. The protagonist. Cast design is best imagined as a solar system of planets, satellites, and comets, supporting characters, in orbit around their sun, the story's core character, aka protagonist or hero, burning at the center. A single character usually plays this star role, but it could be a duo, such as in Thelma and Louise, a team, Inglourious Basterds, an institution, the CDC, in Contagion, even all of humanity considered as one massive group struggling to survive War of the Worlds. When two or more characters fill this role, they act as one. All members of the group want the same thing and suffer or benefit mutually as they pursue it. Whatever happens to one, positive or negative, affects them all. A core character must be empathetic. She or he may or may not be sympathetic. The difference between these two is this. Sympathetic means likable. An amiable, companionate person the target audience might want as friend, family, or neighbor. Empathetic means like me. An innate trait shared by both the core character and the target audience. Sympathy is optional. Empathy essential. For this reason. Audience involvement hinges on an act of personal identification. No matter how charming, attractive, and sympathetic a character may seem, an audience will not connect on good looks alone. Rather, the psychological bond of empathy only develops when an audience subconsciously identifies with a positive human quality emanating from within the character. This quality becomes the story's center of good. The center of good. The moment a story appears in front of audience members or readers, they instantly and instinctively inspect its value-charged landscape, seeking an emotional door into the story, a place to stick their empathy. They sort the positives from the negatives, the goods from the bads, the rights from the wrongs, the things of value from the things of no value. Everyone searches for a center of good because, in his heart of hearts, everyone instinctively sees himself as good. We all know we're flawed, perhaps in need of moral fine-tuning, but when we weigh the positive versus negative charges within, we feel that, on balance, we're overall good, or at least right. The worst of people believe they're justified in what they think and do. Just ask them. Therefore, all people, regardless of their humanity or lack of it, seek a positive glow somewhere in a story's world, a mooring for their empathy. Ideally, the storyteller places this center of good within the protagonist, so that a positive human quality emanates from within the core character and captures the audience's personal involvement. This empathy magnet also anchors the mirror story, which we will explain in Chapter 6. Please note, the principle of the center of good is not a call for sentimentality and Pollyanna cheerfulness. Just as too sweet candy hurts your teeth, a too sugary world hurts your sense of truth. Life begins in balance. Before a story begins, its physical setting, social setting, core value, and core character rest in a state of balance. The protagonist has her daily ups and downs. Who doesn't? Nonetheless, she holds reasonable sovereignty over her existence until something happens. Stage 3, the inciting incident. Prime principle, imbalance. Definition. The inciting incident launches a story by upsetting the equilibrium of the protagonist's life and throwing the story's core value, either positively or negatively, but decisively, out of kilter. This turning point initiates the events that follow and propels the protagonist into action. The inciting incident could be a massive social event or a quiet inner event, a change in national leadership, or a change of mind. It could happen by accident, the protagonist wins the lottery, or by decision, he quits his job to open a new business. It could cause a positive turn, the core character is offered a big promotion, or a negative turn, he goes bankrupt. It could, as it often does, move first to the positive, the core character falls in love with a great guy, and then to the negative, only to discover he's married. From the inciting incident on, a story's core value dynamically changes its charge over the course of the telling. In storytelling, therefore, dynamic means more than active or forceful. It means constant change and progress caused by an alternation between the positive and negative charges of values inherent in the story's events. From the audience's point of view, the inciting incident causes four effects. First, it captures attention. As we pointed out earlier, the mind keys on change, and the inciting incident's sudden pivot of the protagonist's life sharply focuses the audience's interest. Second, it raises the major dramatic question, how will this turn out? This MDQ is very adhesive mental glue. When you think back, how many perfectly lousy stories have you sat through for no other reason than to get the answer to that nagging question, how does this piece of dreck turn out? Third, when curiosity over the MDQ merges with empathy for the protagonist, a story generates the compelling magnetism known as suspense. Suspense doubles involvement. This blend of subjective identification with objective wonder magnifies a story's power tenfold. Fourth, the instant an audience sees the protagonist's life tilt out of balance, an image forms in their imaginations, an image of a scene they know they must see before the story can end. After a lifetime of story going, the audience knows that once an inciting incident hits, negative forces will continually block the protagonist's actions until, at crisis, she finally comes face to face, as it were, with her story's most focused antagonistic power. This critical confrontation is sometimes called the obligatory scene, because having caused audience members to imagine it, the storyteller is obligated to show it to them. It would be rude not to. Stage 4, the object of desire, prime principle, and unfulfilled need.